This is For Your Reference, a sports reference podcast.
Welcome back to For Your Reference, a sports reference podcast. I'm Charlotte, and this is the podcast from Sports Reference where we dig into the interesting stories that we've uncovered while working on our family of websites. Today, I have Andrew Chong, a software test engineer at Sports Reference, joining me to talk about the World Baseball Classic.
Hi, Charlotte. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thanks so much for joining me. It is definitely important that you are here for this episode because I have never watched the Baseball Classic.
And oh.
I know I have no experience, but I'm super excited that we're going to see the World Baseball Classic coming up in 2023. And I know that you have kind of the historical expertise. I hear that maybe you even have a connection to the very beginning. So maybe you could just tell us a little bit about the World Baseball Classic and why it's a fun topic for you.
Sure. Yeah. You should definitely tune in for the 2023 edition. It's going to be a good one. The World Baseball Classic, I guess I consider myself an early adopter of the WBC back when they announced it in 2005. So to give a little bit of history, baseball was basically voted out as an Olympic sport in 2005. But even still, like, baseball and largely all the other international competitions in baseball were largely an amateur event. They didn't use professional players. I think at some point the Baseball World Cup started using minor leaguers, but you really never got like MLB representation at the Olympic level, at the international level. So baseball gets the boot from the Olympics. So Major League Baseball goes, well, okay, we'll start our own thing. Just a few weeks later, and I'm sure there was a lot of lead up to this, but that same year in 2005 at the MLB All-Star Game, they announced the World Baseball Classic being an international event, and it's going to feature professional players. So when I heard of that, it just struck a nerve with me. It made me super excited to see American players at this level. But also just from, my family being from South Korea, being able to see Korean players like for the first time. This is 2006, when the first World Baseball Classic happened. Social media wasn't as big as it was back then. The internet was still kind of new-ish, Twitter like barely existed. I think Twitter started in March of 2006, which is right around the time the World Baseball Classic was happening. So it was this like inside look into other countries and other countries' players, which was part of the reason it excited me. I actually ended up going to the second round in Los Angeles. I had a couple friends out in LA. So when they announced this and the tickets went on sale, I'm like, I got to go to this. And it was probably one of the most exciting sporting events I got to witness in person.
Can you tell me which games you were at in the 2006 event?
Yeah. So this was 16 years ago. So my memory, I'll do my best, but I remember one of the things about buying tickets for the event was you basically bought tickets in like packages. And I remember having to decide, Do I lead with my heart or do I lead with my brain when it comes to deciding which tickets I wanted? Because, you don't know who's going to be there yet. You kind of hope. I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I really want to see South Korea play. And it was either, do I expect them to come in first in their pool or do I expect them to come in second in their pool? Because depending on where they place, dictate if I get to see them, for all their games or just one game. And I remember hemming and hawing over this decision because it's like, if I'm being honest with myself, Japan's probably going to win that group. But I ended up buying the ticket package where with the theoretical Korea victory coming out on top. And they did. They won their group, which, if I'm being 100% honest, I was not expecting. But with a little stroke of luck, I got to see South Korea play for three games in Los Angeles. It was great.
Yeah, that's something that honestly is on my mind all the time when I'm watching tournament style competitions where teams advance. And I'm like, wait, how did all their fans get here? Like, how did they know which tickets to buy? That I'm probably missing something very obvious, but that always confuses me how that works out.
Yeah, like I don't think StubHub existed back then. you know, it was just really just kind of down to luck of getting like targeting these games, and then just all the results kind of playing out the way they needed to for me to see the games I wanted to. So a little bit of luck.
So besides South Korea, there were 16 teams, I think, in the first tournament, representing what they said were the best baseball playing nations in the world, and provided global representation for the event. However, there was no type of qualifying event or statistics that were involved in these determinations. So I'm just wondering, you know, from your perspective, were there, you know, any maybe teams that got left out that could have been in? Was that sort of a questionable way to do things, or were people sort of fine with that?
I think for the most part, because you had kind of all your headliners, right? You had the United States, you had Cuba, you had the Dominican, you had Puerto Rico, you had, you know, Japan, South Korea. You were getting some European representation with Italy. So I think, I'm sure there are nations out there that did have a legitimate gripe back then. But I think for the most part, they got the collection of countries right. And then as of, I think, 2013 is when they started expanding it to qualifiers. So not everyone, like the first two was basically the same pool of countries. And then in 2013, I think there was four teams that could qualify, which led to Brazil making their first appearance and also Spain as well in 2013. And you see that happening now, like we're in the midst of qualifiers for 2023. I think Great Britain and the Czech Republic won their qualifier. So they're two of the teams that will be represented. Then they'll be making their WBC debut as well in 2023. So they're definitely making improvements on that space, and not just being like this, you know, random draw. Like, here's the teams that we feel like should probably be in it. And then on the flip side, there's actually another event called the Premier 12. And that's just much more simple. It's just the top 12 in, you know, the world rankings at that time. And that's like another international level event that's kind of similar to the WBC.
Definitely makes sense. And I don't know if we want to have any spoilers for past events, but we can kind of talk about the teams that have succeeded at the World Baseball Classic. And if anyone like me is confused by the fact that we went 2006 to 2009 to 2013 and then 17, 23, if you're like, this is not adding up, why is it 3 years, then four, and then five? I think I can clarify for people, it is meant to be an every 4 year event, like, you know, other World Cups and other sports. We've just had a few little hiccups getting started and then postponing for the pandemic for the most recent tournament.
Yeah, the 2009 thing was a very deliberate thing, right? I think, and this, I might be completely making this up, I do recall kind of remembering that they wanted to offset the schedule, because I think, you know, 2006, 2010, those are also FIFA World Cup years. So I don't know if that was part of the decision, but I knew it was a very deliberate thing to say, okay, we're going to do the next one 3 years from now, and then following that, do it every 4 years. And of course, with COVID, everything getting thrown off by like a year or so.
Sure. And then back to the teams that have had success, I would say it has fallen in line with what a lot of people would expect to be the countries that have, you know, a strong baseball culture ending up being dominant in the tournament. So we have two wins for Japan in the first two tournaments, followed by Dominican Republic and the USA, correct?
That is correct. I think going into the first one, I think everyone just kind of expected the United States to show up and just kind of trounce the tournament, you know, kind of run the table and really just kind of, you know, making an exhibition. And that did not play out at all. I mean, you know, in the opening round, they lost to Canada, which was pretty unexpected. You know, the United States, they did struggle. They for sure had the players. I mean, looking at their roster, it was like, you know, basically just an all-star team. But for whatever reason, they just kind of put it together as a team. And yeah, they struggled. They didn't make the knockout, you know, like the knockout round. You know, they were knocked out in the second round. And in 2009, it kind of followed the same suit. Like they just didn't have that success, you know, until they finally won it all in 2017. And I think, you know, the expectation going in, maybe you know, maybe I'm reading into the tea leaves too much, but I think they just kind of expected to show up and win this thing back in 2006. And that was just kind of like a rude awakening for them, which kind of led to the culmination of 2017, I think, where, you know, over the last couple of iterations of the World Baseball Classic, you know, they're starting to take it a little bit more seriously, I think. And I think you see that with some of the other teams in 2006 as well. Like if you looked at the Dominican Republic, their roster was insane. You know, I think that's who I had my money on. Like if I had to bet, you know, on a team to win, it probably would have been the Dominican Republic in 2006. But the same thing, they struggled, you know, and they ended up, did they make it out of the second round? I don't recall if they made it out of the second round or not. But they certainly weren't one of the finalists, you know? So I think at the international stage, I think, you know, with the pros showing up for the first time, you know, I think there was a bit of a learning curve. It's like, oh, this is what it takes to play at the international level.
Yeah, I think just the fact that the MLB is one of, or I guess the biggest baseball organization, and, you know, we're home base for the MLB. We're like, oh, obviously we're going to be able to field an awesome team. And what I saw in my research was that Derek Jeter was kind of the first one to step up and enthusiastically be like, yeah, I want to be on the Team USA, encouraged other players to join. And even for me, as, you know, maybe a more recent baseball fan, will say these names were very familiar to me. Derek Jeter, Ken Griffey Jr., Alex Rodriguez. So they definitely felt like they had an advantage just, you know, with that star power. If we look at other teams that did really well in that first tournament, we have Cuba, who didn't have any American players or any MLB players because they did not want to include any defectors on their team. That was, you know, a whole big issue even in just getting the tournament to happen was, can we have Cuba compete given the current state of the U.S. embargo? I'm kind of on a little tangent here, but they did end up coming in second in the tournament. And in order to circumvent the embargo, they donated all of their prize money to victims of Hurricane Katrina. And then, you know, the other team that did really well, obviously the winners, Japan, they only had two MLB players on their roster. Although, and I think we can definitely get into this, 11 future MLB debuts on the Japanese roster. So Americans definitely came in thinking, oh, we're going to dominate. We have all the talent because we have the biggest, you know, professional league, but not so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at that roster and it's just, yeah, it's the names just pop off, right? You got A-Rod, Derek Jeter, Chipper Jones, Ken Griffey Jr., you know, Chase Utley. And it's hard to look at that roster and be like, oh, this team's just going to, you know, this is going to be a cakewalk. You know, I use Stathead to kind of look at some of the numbers to see, like, did the United States field the best possible team? And for the most part, they did. I mean, a lot of these players were, you know, the number one war, like they had the number one war for their position. You know, Derek Lee, 7.7 war in 2005. He was the top first baseman. You know, Chase Utley, I think he was tied for second or tied for first with 7.3 war. Like these are good players. A-Rod is coming off an MVP year in 2005, led the AL in home runs, led the league in war. I mean, you know, you expect these teams to show up and just kind of trounce the competition. They didn't. And it's fascinating to see the teams, like you said, like the teams that did do well. Cuba coming out of it. I think there were two future MLB players on that team. So they had Yuli Gurriel, who was on the Astros, won a World Series with them back in 2017. Alexi Ramirez, you know, spent a lot of time with the White Sox. And Yunieski Maya, who actually played in the KBO. So no, I could not quite the MLB, but again, he was able to play in another league outside of Cuba. And you see that in the future as well. In 2009 was kind of a sneak peek at seeing Aroldis Chapman, Yoenis Cespedes, Leonis Martin. These players that, you know, people kind of had them, like scouts had them on their radar, but never really got to see them in this kind of stage. And then as you touched on with Japan, you know, at the time it was obviously Ichiro. And there was also Akinori Otsuka, who was a pitcher for the Rangers in the Rangers system then. You had a bunch of players come out of this post WBC that made it to the MLB. And again, like these are, you know, not just a bunch of scrubs. You had Akinori Iwamura. He was the starting second baseman for the 2008 World Series Tampa Bay team. You know, Nori Aoki, he played for the Brewers for a bit. You know, he accumulated 10 WAR over his 6-year career. It was just neat to be able to see these players and seeing them ply their trade at this stage under the spotlight, and then kind of retrospectively looking back, being like, oh yeah, like that the player that was on this team and, you know, for the Cubs, like Kosuke Fukudome played for the Cubs. He was also on the WBC team. And looking back at that roster was just kind of like a moment where I was like, oh wow, yeah, like this was maybe the launch pad for a lot of these players. I mean, certainly we can talk about Daisuke Matsuzaka. This was kind of his, like, you know, worldwide debut, which led to him getting signed by the Red Sox. So it was neat to see that and neat to reflect on that, especially just like, oh yeah, this is like the first time we got to see these players on this stage.
Yeah, there was definitely all the players you mentioned were notables, but Daisuke was the one that I did my little deep dive into when I was clicking through the World Baseball Classic pages and saying, which of these names do I recognize? And he's kind of the standout because he was the MVP of the first World Baseball Classic, you know, and then the second one as well. and really became like a national hero for Japan. And it was sort of having that stage that really upped his profile and made him the center of like a bidding war between MLB teams. Mm-hmm. They might've like known about him before, but I would say his star was increased by a whole lot.
Yeah. For sure. This is the part that like I couldn't recall how exactly it went down. And in my research, I couldn't really find anything either, which is kind of surprising. But like my question coming into this was like, was this the moment he got on everyone's radar, or did people kind of know about him? Was this the event that cemented in his mind, like, hey, maybe I am ready to go to the major leagues? This is like his party. He won the MVP, you know, and the timing of it could not have worked out better for him, because he, you know, with the posting system, the way it works in Japan, if you're assigned to a contract with an NPB team, you know, you can't just like leave. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to go to the majors now. Like, this is just not the way it works. So the team has to basically agree to let your contract go for auction and a posting process. And it's like a blind bid, right? So you have no idea what other teams are going to bid. You got to put your number in and hope it's the winning one. And he ended up getting the posting bid alone was, I think, $51.1 million. And that's not his contract. That's just like to pay the money to have the rights to negotiate a contract with the player, which was kind of unheard of at the time, right? Like, I think Ichiro's posting was like somewhere in the tens of millions, you know, not 50 million like with Matsuzaka. And it's just the way it played out could not have been more perfect for him. Like, he, you know, his profile, he was an ace in Japan. So if you followed the NPB, like, you know, he was definitely on your radar. Like, I'm sure scouts knew about him. Then the World Baseball Classic happens, you know, he pitches lights out, wins the MVP. And then I think that following fall, they announced that they were going to post him, the Red Sox bid, and then they signed him to a contract. And, you know, he's a part of the team that wins the World Series in, when was that? Was it 2007 that the Red Sox won it? But he was a part of that World Series team. So, you know, his overall career had mixed success, but, you know, flags fly forever. So if he helped you to a World Series, I would say that's money well spent.
Sure. Yeah. I have in my notes that he sort of announced his MLB interest and signed with Scott Boras in October, 2006. And then the bidding posting, I guess, happened after he got the MVP. So his stock was just at an all-time high. The articles that I found were from like Boston local newspapers saying there were 16 TV satellite trucks lined up for his, you know, announcement in Boston when he flew in. And the NESN Boston cable network did an 18-hour Matsuzaka marathon and then followed that with a replay of his WBC championship game the next day, like the next night on their channel.
Wow. So talk about a hype video.
Yeah. And, just a few more like fun details. There were, you know, positive comments from Prime Minister of Japan, Prime Minister Abe, and then they did a little reception where they served hot dogs, Yankee pot roast, and sushi to show that they were going to combine the two cultures.
Oh my.
I know. I thought the Yankee pot roast was a funny touch. I was like, for a minute, I full on was like, is this a joke that it's a pot roast that contains meat of Yankee players or something? But no, it's just a regular dish that is, I guess, common in New England. So there's the answer on that. But I thought something else really interesting about his story was that the World Baseball Classic was, you know, kind of what made the interest in him so high. But then when he wanted to go back and play in 2009, mm-hmm. there was some pushback from the Red Sox, and they were like, we don't want him to, you know, get injured. Like, he's kind of valuable to us. And there was actually like comments in the media where they were saying they felt like he came unprepared for the MLB season because he had put too much focus into preparing for the World Baseball Classic. And Japanese fans are like, so what? Like, that's the way more important event. Like, obviously you put that event above all else, but in the US, it's just sort of a different perspective.
Yeah, I think that was one of the more fascinating things was how each country's fandom perceived it. I think, you know, there was kind of this sentiment in Japan where it's like, you know, if you play for the national team in the WBC, and then you come back and you struggle, it's going to be worth it because you won the WBC. Whereas I think that wouldn't fly in the United States. You know, and the sentiment of like, oh, we don't want our players to go, like, that was a pretty big one. I remember in 2006 was just like, what's going to happen? You know, are these players going to be prone to injury because it's so early in the year? You know, they're like in the midst of spring training. We don't want to send our play, like a lot of owners and front offices were like, you know, we don't want to send our players off to this thing to get hurt. Especially for 2006, because no one knew if this thing was going to stick or not. So I kind of get that. But yeah, I'm glad that, you know, for the most part, there hasn't been a lot of controversy as far as like releasing players to play. So I think that's kind of what led to the success of it, was just allowing these players to go and do their thing instead of kind of, you know, being ticky-tack about who can and who can't play, depending on like what franchise they're on.
For sure. And I think definitely the tide can change when, you know, the event has been maybe proven a little bit more. Maybe the US gets a win under their belt. Maybe feelings are different now.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, like, look at the team that the United States is putting together for 2023. I mean, maybe this is recency bias, but it looks like the strongest team that the United States has put together by far. I mean, we're finally going to see, if we're lucky and they stay healthy enough, we're finally going to see Mike Trout. We're finally going to see Bryce Harper on this team. You know, Mookie Betts, like just the names that are coming out. It's just like unbelievable. Trey Turner. Every announcement, I was just like, oh my gosh, this player is going to play. Like, whereas in 2006, it was just like, who's going to show up for this team? And then until finally Jeter showed up and said, this is a big deal. I think that's when started attracting a lot more of the players. But I'm glad that it's gained kind of its relevancy and people are, especially in the United States, are kind of excited about it. You know, 2017 for sure helped. I mean, that was a great run. You have the Adam Jones catch, you know, Marcus Stroman pitches out of his mind. That was a good one. That was a fun iteration for 2017. So hopefully they'll be able to roll that and continue that success in 2023.
Absolutely. 2023 with Captain Mike Trout, Coach Ken Griffey Jr. He's coming back to coach. So yeah, I also looked at this list of commitments so far. You know, there's a few websites that have been kind of catching all of those announcements. And I'm pretty excited. I definitely will be watching my first World Baseball Classic in 2023. And I think we've kind of done the whole gamut from 2006 to present day or to future. But I have one more thing for my research that I just had to include. I don't know if we need a new audio sting for like Charlotte's irrelevant tangent rabbit hole, but I always seem to find something when I'm researching that I'm like, I just got to tell everybody. And this one was, I happened to click through to Loic Van Mill, hopefully I'm pronouncing correctly, who is a 7'1" pitcher who appeared in the 2017 World Baseball Classic. And he ended up having an at-bat versus a 6'8" batter from Israel that one in the book says what we believe is the tallest ever pitcher batter matchup. I was like, that's pretty fascinating. I'm going to click through, see what else I can learn about this man. You might be surprised to know that his life was saved by kangaroos. he was playing baseball in Australia, and I guess he was, I think, on a trip with his team and decided to go out on a little solo hike, slipped and fell, was unconscious on the ground for over 24 hours. Whoa. And yeah, like probably would have, you know, not survived if it hadn't been for kangaroos that woke him up with their, you know, pitter pattering around
with their kangarooing.
Yeah. And so the kangaroos sort of revived him to consciousness, and he was able to get himself to help, I guess. I don't have clarity on how that worked out for him, but, you know, was alert enough to make his way out to some trail or something and get attention. And he did seem to make a recovery. He actually did return to playing professional baseball, but within the year did pass away, and that was attributed to the accident. So there's not a lot of information about that, but I thought that was so fascinating that after being saved by kangaroos, he returned to, you know, playing professional baseball. I thought that was crazy.
Yeah, what a story. My goodness. Yeah, being rescued by kangaroos. Like, how does that change your outlook on life after that event?
I know. Well, thanks for humoring me. I don't know if you found anything else super exciting in your research.
So there's one interesting tidbit that I remember from 2013. So let me pull this up. So in 2013, Brazil made the World Baseball Classic for the very first time. You know, they were one of the qualifying teams. So I'm going to read some of the names off of this this roster, and I want to get your response. All right, so we have Rafael Fernandez. We have Rafael Moreno. We have Ernesto Norris. Thiago Vieira. We have Hugo Kanabushi. Gabriel Asakura, Carlos Yoshimura, Daniel Matsumoto. So you see that the names have a bit of Japanese flair. And what I learned was Brazil actually has, you know, a significant, I don't know if significant is the right word, but they have a large enough Japanese population that a lot of their national baseball team are, you know, Brazilian born Japanese. And I thought that was really fascinating. And it's not unheard of. For example, I know Argentina, you know, they have a small Korean population. So I just thought it was fascinating. It's like, wow, how did these Japanese families like end up in Cuba or in Brazil and end up representing the nation on their baseball team? So I always thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, that is fascinating. These qualifiers are finishing up in the very near future because we've got to get ready for January, right? That's when the actual World Classic Games start.
According to Wikipedia, dates March 8th through the 21st, 2023.
I was way off. Well, I'm so excited to have this on my calendar. For our listeners, if you have, you know, anything that you would like to share, any topics you would like us to cover on future episodes, please do feel free to reach out. podcast@sportsreference.com. Thank you so much for listening. Today, to this,
but that same year in 2005 at the MLB All-Star Game.